This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When Secretary of State Colin Powell spoke earlier today, his immediate audience was the Security Council of the United Nations. He hoped to convince the other members of the Council that Iraq is dangerous, that it's hiding its weapons of mass destruction, that it defies UN resolutions, and that it must be stopped before it's too late. His other audience, though, was the American public. And these two audiences are closely intertwined. Polls have consistently shown that while Americans are generally willing to attack Iraq, they do not want to go it alone. They want to do it in the context of the United Nations. This hour, how well did the Secretary do? Were you convinced that something must be done and soon? Did it change your mind? If so, why? And if not, why not? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A now is Stephen Kull, Director of the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland, which has been polling Americans on their opinions about U.S. policies toward Iraq. And thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You've been conducting polls, as I mentioned, and recently you did one on what Americans think of U.S. policy toward Iraq. Where do Americans stand on this issue right now?
Well, right now, Americans feel that there's a real threat there from Iraq, and they do want to see something solved. They want to see a change. At the same time, they're not convinced that we need to go forward unilaterally. They want to see other members of the Security Council join with us, and they want UN approval for this action.
What's the divide there?
Well, in terms of proportions, at least 2-1. Only about a third of the country right now says we're ready to go without UN approval. Now, after today, that might change a bit. There might be a surge in among those who are ready to take unilateral action. But the information that came out, though, can cut two ways. It also highlights a key issue, which is this information is relevant to the process of disarmament, and it may raise questions in people's mind. Why isn't this information being made available to UN inspectors? So there's the polls have already shown that by a 2-1 margin, the public would really like to see this resolved through the inspection and disarmament process, not through military action. So this new information poses new opportunities for the disarmament inspection process at the same time that it raises questions about whether it's feasible, whether Iraq will ultimately cooperate.
Let me get a little bit more specific here. I mean, you phrased some of your questions pretty interestingly. Let's exploring different scenarios, for example. Give us some examples.
Well, we've asked, what if the president goes ahead and takes this action and the Security Council does not come out in support of it? What would you do then? And if would you support the president? But would you agree with the president? And about 2/3 will say, I won't agree with that decision. But also about 2/3 will say, I would support the president. So it's a subtle thing because people do want to line up behind the commander-in-chief. And there's historically, we've always seen that there's a kind of rally around the president, rally around the flag, support the troops, that kind of effect. So if the president goes ahead, yes. But underneath there are doubts. And with time, if everything goes really well, then there's no issue. But if there are difficulties, if there are a lot of casualties, if there are difficulties on the ground there, if it leads to terrorist attacks, that kind of thing, these underlying doubts will come to the surface. And if we did not have UN Security Council approval, people will be going in a kind of nervous way, and the support will be much more frail.
How does the level of support now compare with the level of public support before the first Gulf War back in 1991?
It's similar. The difference, though, was at that time there was a Security Council approval, and we don't have that now. We actually had Security Council approval before we had a congressional approval. During the first Gulf War. So that's a different situation. It's like the rest of the world was saying, okay, let's go, and then the American public vacillated a bit, but came along, and then once it got going, then they really got behind.
Now, you also
track... That's not how they're feel. That's not what they believe is going on. They know that there's a lot of criticism out there in the larger world. They know that there are a lot of reservations out there.
You track the polls of other organizations as well as your own.
That's right.
How do their results compare with yours?
Oh, very similarly. They basically line up. It depends upon, in many cases, how you ask the question. If you simply ask, should the United States take military action against Iraq, support can be as high as in the mid-60s, 60% range. Mm-hmm. But then if you follow on and say, well, what if we don't have UN approval, what then? And then it drops down significantly.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions, will you be doing a subsequent poll after this speech today?
Mm-hmm.
And how soon can you expect results from that?
Oh, maybe a week and a half or so.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people ask questions about methodology. I've never been called by a pollster, so can you give us a quick 30-second answer on that?
Well, it's I think if I described it in terms of my experience, you know, every night we get maybe 200 responses, and after when you have the first 200, you get a certain set of numbers, and then as you get a little bit more and a little bit more, you start realizing with every 100, it keeps coming in pretty close as what you had before, and so you can see that if you just went on and did more and more and more, it would really all be the same. But intuitively, it's sort of hard to grasp that if you ask 600, 800,000 Americans randomly selected, that this will really tell you what the American public thinks. But if you actually look at a lot of different polls, they pretty much say the same thing. If you ask the poll question again, it comes out pretty much the same. So I understand how it's kind of counterintuitive for people. But if you saw what I see every night with the poll numbers coming in every night, and you can really see that it does work.
Based on the questions that have been interesting in your polls and other polls, did Secretary Powell in his remarks today address the questions, address the concerns that people have expressed in those opinion polls?
Well, one thing that he did point to that is a very strong concern for people is the connection with Al-Qaeda, and that really is something new in that he really brought new evidence to light that may make a real impact on people. That because there is a belief in the public that there was a link between Al-Qaeda and Iraq, but people were saying, we haven't seen the evidence. We believe it, but we haven't seen a convincing evidence. That will probably change. Probably there'll be much larger percentage saying that they are convinced now, and that is another source of legitimation for military action. If it's framed as this is related to our self-defense, not just a question of stopping a nuclear proliferation, that could change the way the public responds to it.
Well, let's hear from some members of the public. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Pamela, who's with us from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hello, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
Actually, I'm calling in to say that I was very impressed by Secretary Powell's address. Naturally, I would like to avoid war at all costs to a certain degree. I feel my concern is how much time. I think that was a very important point that Secretary Powell made. Is there really any amount of time that we can give this man to turn around the compelling evidence that was presented today to show that this man is incredibly deceitful lends me to believe that 1 month, 6 months, a year will not change the inevitable outcome.
Did his presentation change your mind, or were you leaning towards this opinion before?
I've always been leaning towards. Naturally, I feel that a unified UN, working with them, would be the ultimate goal. But I did want to see what else was out there. I felt there had to be something that they were holding back because they were just too convicted. And I think it's so easy to dismiss it all and say, oh, it's all about oil. You know, to me, that's extremely shallow.
Mm-hmm.
No, it couldn't possibly be about oil, and I've never believed that.
Stephen Culler.
So it just convinced me more.
Stephen Culler, were you asking the right questions?
Oh, I would say yes. Most Americans don't think that that oil is really the issue either, and most of the views expressed by the caller are pretty much in line with the majority of the public.
Well, Pamela, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Okay. Let's go with Sarah, and Sarah's with us from Minneapolis.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My feelings were that I really wasn't convinced. While it may have been a good speech technically, I don't think that Secretary of State Powell really gave the American public what they wanted to hear. There was a lot of talk about the aluminum tubes and the connections and that sort of thing, but it almost went on too long. It was almost too detailed. I don't think that the American public is as naive as they once were. They understand this isn't about aluminum tubes, and it's not about, you know, somebody coming to Iraq for an operation. It's about human lives that are lost. It's about Iraqi lives and American lives, and I think they're more compassionate than that. So I think he failed to make the case, and I just wasn't convinced at all. And as far as the connection with the Al-Qaeda connection, which was seemed to be very loose in at best, I would point out that this is also not new information. As many as 6 months ago, there were articles about a small group of people that had some ties to Al-Qaeda operating in the north of Iraq, and the Kurds at that time had actually, in articles that were published, they said they begged the CIA to come and take a look at that and do something about it, and they just basically ignored them.
Well,
and I might point out that the north of Iraq is under Kurdish administration, under an American-operated no-fly zone with CIA offices and operatives in that area. So if there are some small people of Al-Qaeda that are operating there, I guess the United States ought to take part of the blame for that. They're not operating in Baghdad, apparently.
Okay, Sarah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I do think that some of these revelations are going to generate some questions about, if we had this information, why haven't we taken some action on it?
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody is going to say, oh, this is cause for us to take military action against Iraq. They'll say, why aren't we, again, going in there, disarming and taking charge of the situation, particularly in the areas outside of Saddam's control.
Let's get a quick question from Jesse in Minneapolis.
Yes, actually, I'd like to know where the information is coming that Americans are against action, or at least against action without the UN, by a two-thirds margin. The polls I'm looking at on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News all have it as a pretty much a 3-1 for action without UN approval. So
That's not correct, actually. There are the highest numbers that you find are in the high 60s in response to some questions about military action. But when there's a follow-on question that asks about doing that without UN approval, it drops down to at least half. Now, when the question is, it's clear that we're talking about invasion, the support is even lower.
Well, I guess maybe I just don't see that on any of these polls, because their questions are fairly straightforward. Do we have, didn't Secretary Powell put enough forward to
Oh, so this is a snap poll, Jesse, following the Secretary's speech today.
This has to be after the
speech today, and Stephen Culler has been talking about earlier polls.
Right. There are some when there are these polls on the internet where people can just on their own self-selected vote. That doesn't tell you really anything about the general American public. It needs to be a random sample, scientifically selected.
Stephen Culler, thanks very much for coming in today. We appreciate it. Stephen Culler, director of the Program on International Policy Attitudes. We're going to continue taking your phone calls about reaction to Secretary Powell's speech. Did it convince you? 800-989-8255. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about Secretary Powell's address today at the United Nations Security Council and how that may have affected Americans' views on the possibility of war with Iraq. You're, of course, invited to join the discussion. Was your mind changed today? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now on the line is Michael Duffy, Washington Bureau Chief for Time Magazine. He's on the line from his office here in Washington. And, Michael, good to have you back on the program.
Thanks, Neil.
This has been touted as a critical event in the development of the administration's policies, both towards the United Nations and towards bringing the American public around. Secretary Powell made a lengthy, methodical, and detailed presentation to the Security Council today. How did he do?
Well, I thought it was a very powerful speech on all four categories, how Iraq has handled the inspection, their progress on chemical and biological and nuclear weapons, and then finally on al-Qaeda, the connections with al-Qaeda. I thought that the administration put a variety of new information from a variety of sources on the table that we had never seen before, and as you point out before, it will all need to be considered and looked at, but there was a lot of stuff that we had not seen.
Here's an email question we got from Jeff Benden in Atlanta. Secretary Powell's presentation, he says, was powerful and convincing. My question is, why didn't the Bush administration make this argument to us, the American people? This kind of threat to the United States does not and should not require permission from France to be addressed. Had I understood the totality of this threat earlier, I would have supported the war effort from the beginning.
Well, the administration has two goals here. It's not simply, as you pointed out before, to talk to the people in the coffee shops of Dubuque and Manchester, though that is an important goal. They also know that the American public will support this in direct relation to Washington's ability to bring the allies on board. So while Powell's speech was given in the UN Security Council as a way to address those allies, it was also aimed at coffee shops here in the country.
Well, we were just speaking earlier with Stephen Kull, a pollster, and I'm wondering, is the administration worried about the, you know, the attitudes of the public that those polls suggest, that they, that the public is overwhelmingly in favor of doing this, if we do it at all, with the support of the United Nations?
Yes, I think if they were not worried, they would have gone by now, and there are people in this administration that would have preferred to have gone already. But wiser heads who know that it's the American public that does most of the fighting and the dying in our wars, you need to have them on board. You need to make sure that the country is behind you to some extent, you know, at least 50% of them, before you go off and do something like this, especially if you're willing to go alone. So I think the administration, over a number of times in the last 6 months, has said, okay, let's wait. Let's get a few more troops on board, a few more people on board. And we're seeing that again today. Clearly, this administration is willing to wait another week or two or three if we can bring the allies on board, because I know more Americans will say, okay, I get it now. Let's do it. And so I think they are willing to wait just as long as it takes to bring more people on the team.
Let's go now to Troy, who joins us from Oakland, California.
Hi, thank you very much.
Sure.
First thing I'd like to say is I do support the troops. I totally support them. But Colin Powell's speech didn't do anything to change my mind against the war. Best way to help our troops out and keep them safe is to prevent this war and continue the inspections. A previous caller mentioned about the Northern Iraq al-Qaeda connection.
That's Al-Ansar, yes.
And like she said, why didn't we just bomb them like we do when we find them in Pakistan or right on the border of Afghan and Pakistan? I just don't believe that. Why did we withhold all this information till now when we could have done this 2-3 months ago if it was really that strong? And then I really feel suspicious of the administration when Rumsfeld wanted to bomb Iraq 2 days after September 11th. That's been published.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether that's absolutely true or not. I just don't believe the reasons for going to war. We're just pushing ahead, and if we have all this information on Iraq, and especially these electronic intercepts?
Yeah.
I don't believe in those one bit. That could be anybody.
It could be
very subjective.
If the Security Council takes up another resolution, and if the Security Council says inspections are not working, Iraq is not complying, and authorizes the use of force, would that be enough for you?
That's a tough one, because they sure went along. They went along with us on that last vote, all of them. I think that some of them regret it now. I don't. I'm really skeptical of that, because we're throwing money around to people in Afghanistan and Pakistan and Turkey and all these other places trying to get them to support us. We're basically buying people, or trying to. I'm not sure that we couldn't just buy their votes. Some people just going along with it, whether they believe it or not. And I would still be skeptical. I support our troops, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. Our military, our people that are out there fighting, I absolutely support them. I want them home safely. But our administration is very questionable as far as their honesty goes. I mean, we can't even get energy answers from these people.
Yeah.
You know, what happened to Ken Lay? And like I said, if we have all this information about Iraq, why can't we find bin Laden?
Troy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Michael Duffy, what about that question about Al-Ansar? Indeed, the caller is correct. There were reports months ago, and the administration did seem skeptical about them.
They did. I think one of the reasons that it's taken them so long is they have been busy gathering this stuff. They have used this period to turn on all the lights and all the cameras and all the satellites overhead and get what they can get. And one of the advantages, I think, if we could get them to speak frankly, they would say, and now that we've put it on the table, we don't intend to leave him a lot of time to respond to it. They've waited and waited and waited. He doesn't have a lot of time to react to all of this. On Ansar, I think I learned a couple of new things. Yes, we knew about the group. We weren't sure about their relations with Baghdad. The administration, Powell said today that the long war between Baghdad, which is secular, and al-Qaeda, which is more religious in nature, is over. And they went further than I had heard in, you know, a year and a half about their links with Baghdad, saying that Baghdad had sent representatives to Afghanistan. That was new to me, that they were senior Baghdad officials in the al-Ansar camp. That was new to me. We knew that this fellow Abu Zakari was trying to get chemical weapons, but we know more about it today. And they suggested there were 24, they said two dozen al-Qaeda extremists in Baghdad, where I think he said they operate freely. It's the stuff about al-Qaeda that is both, I think, going to be listened to very carefully, as this caller does, but by a lot of Americans, because 911 is still so important in people's minds. And it's important in Europe, too.
Well, let's go now to James, who's on the line with us from Frankfurt, Germany.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was already convinced that the United States should take action, and with the backing of the United Nations, and too, a long time ago, with this very deceitful man. I had a sister who was in the first Gulf War in Saudi Arabia, and then, maybe about a year or two ago, she said, "Mark my words, we'll have to deal with Saddam Hussein again." And here we are.
You said you support action with the United Nations. If the United Nations does not go along, would you continue to support the idea that the United States, Britain, and other allies, the so-called coalition of the willing, went ahead without UN support?
Well, they're going to have to work on a number of fronts, especially on the diplomatic front, and then afterwards to show the deceptiveness and the deceiving of Saddam Hussein, because it's in his character. It seems like he wants to start a war every 10 years, and now we're up for one. And he's had the time now to develop his capabilities to, arm himself with weapons of mass destruction, ABC weapons, and this is what I'm seeing.
I don't want to get into a network fight, but we call those NBC weapons here, nuclear, biological, and chemical. But go ahead.
ABC, atomic, biological, chemical.
I see. All right. Well, yeah. we'll work CBS in somehow.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, James.
Yes, you're welcome.
Okay. Michael Duffy, the choice of the messenger, Colin Powell, in the context of the United Nations, throughout this whole argument, he's been presented as the most multilateral in an administration with strong unilateralist tendencies.
He absolutely is. It's not simply because of Iraq. He has a lot of business to conduct with allies all across the world, and so he needs to maintain these relations. The administration does, and so he's been the most vocal inside for the internationalist route, and sometimes a lonely voice, as we know. But quite apart from that, he's hugely popular in the United States, And the polls show, and I suspect if Steve is still around, he'd echo this, the polls show that Americans trust him about a fifth more than they trust President Bush on these foreign policy things, about 20 points higher. They have a faith in what he says. And so it made sense for the administration to make sure that Powell was the one who was making, if not the ultimate case, the penultimate case for action.
And that's an interesting thing you said, the penultimate case. Secretary Powell arguing this before the United Nations leaves one major arrow in the administration's quiver, and that's the Oval Office address.
Right, and they haven't given us a date on that, but we think it's coming toward the end of this month sometime. I do think there was a bit of genius in waiting this long, as the caller was implying, for a different reason. I think they wanted to really shorten the time frame for Hussein to react to this much stuff. There's no way he can come clean on all those trucks and all those labs and all those documents and all the things that were laid on the table today. So this, I think, really shortens the ropes.
Let's go now to Malik, who's with us from Fort Benning, Georgia.
Hello, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
My comment was, I'm in the military. I feel that the UN, as well as the people of America, should go ahead and let us do our job. I mean, they've already presented what they need to present. Let us do what we got to do, and then move on from there. I mean, if America gets bombed again or something happens, they're going to look to the soldiers to take care of America. So quit whining, quit complaining, and let us do our job.
Were you listening to Secretary Powell's address today?
Yes.
And what did you think of it?
I think, you know, he presented a lot of evidence. And even before he even presented it, I felt like there was even no need for him to present it because it's there. You know, I feel like he's hiding it. So,
if you're not going to go to the Gulf, obviously a lot of the friends that you have may be there already, as far
My
as I know.
My brother's already there. And I do air assault, so I think I'm going pretty soon.
Good luck to you.
Cool.
Thanks very much for the call.
All right. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Here's an email question from Brad in Charleston, South Carolina, Michael. I'm convinced that Saddam will never comply with UN resolutions. However, a strike without UN approval appears to open the door to a greater potential problem, that of completely eroding relations with the rest of the Western world. Responses today from Security Council delegates reinforce this. I should say probably not all of them, but in several cases, he certainly seems to be right.
Oh, and the administration, there are some people in this administration who would say, so what? We have to do this ourselves anyway. But I think one of the prevailing view at the moment is, since this is going to be such a different kind of fight than the first Gulf War, and because we may have to be there for quite a long time, the reason really to get the UN on board isn't simply to go, but so that we can stay, so that Americans aren't the only ones in a post-war Iraq trying to keep the peace and organize the country and being targets. I mean, we really want some help there. And in the end, the reason we're going the internationalist route is as much about what comes after the war than the war itself. There's no doubt that we could fight and win the war alone. It's the peace we have trouble winning.
We're speaking with Michael Duffy, the Washington Bureau Chief of Time Magazine. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Senator Chuck Hagel, a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He's been a skeptic of the administration's arguments about the necessity for going to war early. He's also a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he'll be asking Secretary Powell questions about today's presentation tomorrow on Capitol Hill. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now, Ron joins us on the phone from Coronado, California.
Hi. I just wanted to, first of all, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say a couple things. First of all, I'm in the military, and that guy up in Oakland, California, saying, you know, he supports the troops, but, you know, he worries about them. Don't worry about us. This is what we joined to do. When it's this important and this critical in the wake of 9/11, this is what we want to do. We don't want to sit home and be safe. We want to go over there and take care of business and keep the American people safe. I also have a real problem with Americans that question the veracity of the comments of and the evidence of, you know, Secretary Powell, Secretary Rumsfeld, and the President. We're talking about Saddam Hussein. I mean, who do you trust here, America? Do you trust Saddam or do you trust George Bush? And if you don't trust President Bush and Colin Powell, that we have checks and balances in America. Saddam has none. He's a brutal dictator. He's killed millions of people. or he's been involved in, you know, in the Iran-Iraq war and killing a lot of people. There's no question who you can trust here. Don't worry about the troops. This is what we joined to do. We'll go take care of it. You just sit here and support us, and we appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Okay, Ron, thank you, and good luck.
Thanks.
Michael Duffy.
Was he in the military, Neil? I missed that.
Yes, he said he was.
I thought he was, yes.
Yeah, from Coronado, I suspect he's in the Navy.
That's right.
But I wanted to ask you a question about the responses that we heard after Secretary Powell spoke, beginning with China, going all the way to Germany. With perhaps the exception of France, it seemed to me, and perhaps the exception of Iraq, to be fair, that these were largely prepared statements. Do you think that we got the true reaction of people today, or will we have to wait a couple of days before we begin to parse out what they were really trying to say?
I think we may have to wait a whole week. The statements were no doubt written in advance of what the Secretary had to say, and they dutifully read them. But they're all going to get a chance to sit down and look at this stuff, and I suspect that in a week, after Blix and his deputy go to Baghdad this weekend and then report a week from, I guess, Friday, back in New York, the administration will have spent a lot of time sitting down with every member of the Security Council and trying to build this coalition. Is Powell's goal to get as close to 15 votes for this if they end up going the resolution route as he can? And I suspect he will come close.
We just have about a minute and a half left with you, but what do you think the reaction was in the administration as they heard Russia say, well, we might need another resolution, maybe two, or France saying it's time for enhanced inspections?
I think there's two conversations. There's always the public one, and I think the private one has got to look very differently. All the officials we speak with say that they expect most of the Security Council to be on board should they go that route. And so they give them their due at moments like this and let them say, but I don't think anyone was deterred by anyone in this administration was deterred by the reaction.
Michael Duffy, as always, thanks very much for being with us.
You bet, Neil.
Michael Duffy is the Washington Bureau Chief of Time Magazine. He was on the phone with us from his office here in Washington. We're talking about Secretary Powell's address today at the United Nations Security Council meeting. Was he persuasive enough? Tomorrow, Secretary Powell will be presenting evidence to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. When we come back from a break, we'll be speaking with a member of that committee, a member who's been openly skeptical about the urgency of action against Iraq, Senator Chuck Hagel, a Republican from Nebraska. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at www.fordfound.org. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, on the web at macfound.org. Jennifer and Ted Stanley. And the Pew Charitable Trusts, investing in ideas, returning results. www.pewtrusts.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
One woman looks into a camera, and through black and white film, she tells you her story.
It's a recapitulation of her life and the response of the Jews to being herded into the old ghetto, and it's a summary of what happened to millions of people during the Second World War.
Frederick Wiseman talks about his first fiction film, The Last Letter, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Joining us now for a preview is Senator Chuck Hagel, senior senator from Nebraska, a Republican. Senator Hagel also sits on the Foreign Relations Committee and the Select Committee on Intelligence. And always good to have you on Talk of the Nation, sir.
Thank you very much.
I assume you're watching Secretary Powell this morning. What did you think of his presentation?
Well, I thought Secretary Powell said it in a way that was not only effective, but reached out to the world citizenry and explained in some detail, yes, but in a measured, coherent, and careful way the challenges that we face from Saddam Hussein. I was particularly pleased with his measured tone, the style. I thought he showed the world a wise, steady, cautious America. That's very important because we, the United States, need allies, we need friends, and most importantly, the forum in which Secretary Powell spoke, the United Nations Security Council, sent a very strong message to the world that we, the United States, will work, need to work within the confines and the structures presented by the United Nations. And that's really the future for our world. And I thought he challenged the United Nations and challenged the world.
What questions do you want to ask him tomorrow?
Well, we are going to have an opportunity to talk about all parts of the world, in particular the most dangerous and combustible regions of the world. Certainly Iraq is one, but it is only one. The North Korean situation is very dangerous, and we want to talk a little bit about that. Progress in Afghanistan. I want to talk some about what kind of progress are we making on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. We have been stymied there. We need to move that forward. And I think the other area is India-Pakistan. That represents still a very dangerous situation. And so a number of these things will come into play, and we look forward to talking with the Secretary about all of them.
Did he convince you that the evidence that he presented, the case is urgent enough that even if the United Nations does not decide to go along with us in the framework of the next weeks, as the president has put it, that we should go ahead with our allies?
I don't think that was the choice that he presented, nor even implied that. He challenged the United Nations, as President Bush did back in mid-September. That's appropriate. But again, let's not overlook where he gave that important speech today. He gave it right there in the United Nations within the Security Council, which I believe was responsible and relevant and appropriate. At some point, some decisions are going to have to be made within that Security Council. My guess is the Security Council will wait until Blix comes back from Iraq. He is scheduled to brief the UN Security Council February 14th. Then the Security Council members will make, I suspect, some analysis based on the information that we then have, and a further decision will be made as to where we go from here. It may well result here in the next few weeks in a second UN resolution, the second resolution empowering the United Nations to use military force to disarm Saddam Hussein. If that is the case, then I think that's fine.
If that doesn't pass, should the United States go ahead?
Well, again, I don't think that's the question of the day. Let's allow this time to play out and see where we are. I've said that it's important that the United Nations be part of this. We must work, the United States and our allies must work within the confines of the United Nations. We did that in 1991 when we threw Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait. We were very successful with that, and partly we were successful because we had the force of world opinion on our side. We had the force of the United Nations on our side. The other dynamic of this that we need to keep in mind is it's not just a challenge of removing, if that's the case, Saddam Hussein from power, But then what happens? That's the real complicated, dangerous dynamic of this. What happens after Saddam Hussein is gone? Who stays to rebuild Iraq? Who stays to assure stability in the Middle East, that things actually don't get worse? Who stays to maintain some vigilance over trying to get our arms around all the things we don't know that are out there, but we know something's out there in the way of chemical and biological weapons? It's going to require an immense amount of resources and leadership and commitment from the United States and many of our allies.
The information that was presented today, the intelligence information, as a member of the Intelligence Committee, and I know the Senate's also been getting briefings as well, are you getting more stuff than we saw today?
Well, what we saw today from the Secretary is consistent with what we have seen in the past. Obviously, what he presented in the way of actual satellite photographs and then played the audios in its rough cut version. That specifically is something I had not seen before, and I suspect many of my colleagues had not, but we were not unaware of that intelligence and that information.
And the evidence on things like the mobile labs. But one of the things that seemed to intrigue a lot of people, and experts are saying was new, was the depth of the evidence on the links to terrorism.
Well, that might be because we've never shared much of that intelligence or information. A good amount of this was still circumstantial. It didn't necessarily lead one to the obvious conclusion based on here are the facts. I mean, the Secretary painted a very effective mosaic of bringing all these pieces together and taking you to a logical conclusion based on much of the circumstantial evidence. But on the Al-Qaeda connections, there are still some holes in that, but I don't think it's any mystery or any surprise that Saddam Hussein has some relationships with terrorist organizations and terrorist leaders. That certainly is not a surprise.
And the evidence on mobile laboratories, that sort of thing. Also, were you surprised that the intercepted conversations were played in public? There was some suggestion as recently as yesterday that they might be played in a private session.
No, I think it was important that the administration lay out some of these very specific pieces of intelligence that we have picked up, and these intercepts, I think, are good examples. Our intelligence people have spent an awful lot of time reviewing these declassified pieces that were presented this morning, so that we gave a lot of attention to would we compromise our sources or our means of gathering that intelligence, and our intelligence people came to the conclusion that we could certainly declassify and present what was presented this morning. And I think that was appropriate. I've said for a long time that I felt it was in the interest of the United States, the United Nations, that at some point we start to present some of this information to the world.
In your mind, Senator Hagel, and leaving the questions of political support and support within the United Nations Security Council aside, does the United States need to do anything more, in your mind, to make the case that Saddam Hussein is in defiance of the UN and is continuing to progress on his weapons of mass destruction?
Well, as to the case of Saddam Hussein not being in compliance with the 17 UN resolutions passed since 1991, I think it's quite obvious to all that he is not in compliance and never has been, and at least from what we know, his intentions are probably not to comply. So that case, I think, has been made. I don't think there's any question about that. As to future intentions, as to his efforts to enhance biological chemical programs, to continue to try and develop a nuclear program, those are pieces we have some evidence on. It's still a little sketchy, but I think you've got to base your sense of that question on his past behavior. what he's done in the past, based on what exactly we know he has or has had. His deception over the last 2 months in working with our inspectors who have been over there. He has done nothing to comply or assist in any way to try to disprove the allegation that he, in fact, does not only still possess these weapons, but is continually developing them. So, as we've said, the burden is on Saddam Hussein here to disprove that.
Senator Hagel, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Senator Chuck Hagel, Republican of Nebraska, speaking with us from his office on Capitol Hill. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And now let's hear from John, who's on the line with us from Douglas, Georgia.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hi.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a regular listener.
Well, thank you for that.
I've listened to Secretary Powell's comments this morning, and I listened to the evidence. And prior to the last couple of weeks, I've been one of those who said, Saddam Hussein is a barbaric madman. Let's remove him from power and protect the region. Secretary Powell, of course, is a very believable person, presents evidence in a cool and calm way, and has a very high rating in that way with most people. But what has changed for me is that what I did not see was a sense of urgency from the new information. Almost everything that the Secretary spoke about, we already knew. We already know and suspect that he's used chemical and biological weapons. We already know and suspect he has designs for a nuclear program. Fine. That information, let's say it's a given. Why should the United States be the initiator of the action? Why did we have to negotiate with Turkey? Turkey stands a lot more to in harm's way as a next-door neighbor than we possibly do this far from Iraq. Why did Turkey not initiate the action, declare war, remove him from power, and then request help? What I want to know is, why is it the manifest destiny of the United States to take the lead when I see no immediate urgency and an immediate threat to the United States?
John, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And let's go now to Mark, who's with us from San Remo in Italy.
Good afternoon over there. Good evening from here.
Good evening.
I found Secretary Colin Powell's speech very honest and direct, and I admire his efforts to go through the Security Council and to convince public opinion. However, here in Europe, and I believe in the rest of the world and a significant part of the United States, the general public are against resolving this problem, and it is a problem, through violent means. I believe that headway is being made through the weapons inspectors, and that we should continue to diminish Saddam Hussein's power to develop these weapons by continuing and extending these inspections, as proposed by the French Foreign Minister in the Secretary Council today, Security Council today. Mm-hmm. But what I also believe is that, such is the power of the United States and the sheer determination of the Bush administration to go ahead and remove Saddam Hussein, they said it right at the beginning and then changed their argument to disarmament, that I think that ultimately, countries like France and Russia will come round. They're pandering to public opinion at the moment, and that ultimately that they will just hang out for the best possible deal in an eventual carve-up of Iraq's economic goods. But quite frankly, I don't think we can justify a violent solution to this when there's a peaceful solution available, and therefore risk the lives of innocent Iraqi civilians and also the lives of the military.
Mark, thanks very much for calling in.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. See if we get one quick comment. And this is Don, who's with us from Hamilton, Ohio. And Don, you've got about 30 seconds.
Yes, I agree that I was reading in Z Magazine, zmag.org, a listing of all the bribery, blackmail, and threats that the United States has been exerting against the bureaucrats in the Security Council, threatening to cut off aid to even starving countries and bribes to other countries. So any kind of poll that's based on the idea that somehow the Security Council of bureaucrats represents the people of these countries who overwhelmingly oppose the war should be completely discounted. I think people in this country should realize that. And I would also mention that just 2 months ago, the Knight Ridder News Service pointed out that the Bush administration had been pressuring its own people to lie against Iraq. and that has gotten very little attention in the media. It's almost as if they feel that this is going to interfere with their ability to manipulate opinion for this war. The Bush administration people had been...
Don, I'm afraid we have to go. We're just running out of time, but I appreciate you calling in. Thanks very much. Our coverage of the speech and reaction to it and further developments continues on NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.